Millennials are the largest, most educated generation in American history. They are known for little more than their addiction to technology and a sense of entitlement, however. These and many other misconceptions abound. Our guest speaker's talk will shed light on this unique generation, addressing challenges, values, and what the future of America may look like with this generation in positions of power. Katie French, the daughter of Jim and Christina Garner, was raised in this congregation. She is a writer and a stand-up comedian whose day job as a copywriter for a creative agency has steeped her in research associated with the millennial generation market. She authored a book called The Last Book You Will Ever Read, a preparation guide for the 2012 apocalypse, which now, fortunately, is irrelevant. Let us welcome Katie French.
Thank you, Dale, and hello, everybody. I see a lot of faces I recognize here from childhood. One of you I think I babysat. But it's nice to be here. As Dale mentioned, my name's Katie French. I am the daughter of Jim and Christina. I was raised in this church, and I think I'm probably a member of the first generations that came up in Unitarianism. So you guys haven't seen me around because at 16, my mom, like a good Unitarian, offered me the choice of religious freedom. And I felt at the time that the loving and inclusive community of the Unitarian Church was a little bit too oppressive. So I chose instead to sleep in on Sundays, and I still kind of do. But I do consider myself a Unitarian in practice, if not in presence. So I'm here today to talk to you guys about the millennial generation. Millennials were born between 1980 and 2000, depending on who you talk to. But for purposes of this talk, I'll say that that's the group we're talking about today. As mentioned, we are the largest generation. We're about 80 million strong. We are the most educated and the most racially diverse generation thus far. But most importantly to me, I think that we're the most misunderstood. This generation has a lot of different names: Gen Y, the Boomerang Generation, and of course the classic, these kids today. Of course you've heard of us, you're probably gonna hear of us more. The media seems to have recently discovered us, and so you're bombarded by headline after headline trying to understand who we are. The cover story of Time last month was on this subject as well. The media, researchers, marketers, politicians, everyone is trying to dissect us to find out exactly who we are, to find out if we're truly lazy or just lost. And I understand why these articles are written, because I sense more conflict between generations than I think there's ever been. There's a very strong divide here that is not just from generation to generation, but every other generation against us. If my parents fought with their parents over music and politics, now they at least both agree that whatever I'm doing it wrong. In some ways, they're right, but in a lot of ways, I think they're wrong. That's why I'm talking to you today. I feel passionately about this subject because I am a millennial, of course, and I also consider myself a self-appointed expert, which is exactly the type of narcissistic thinking that millennials are known for. But I say this for several good reasons. First, because I am a millennial, but I've also I've experienced just about every obstacle facing my generation at every formative age. Like I said, I'm 28, so everything that has kind of shaped us has hit me at every crucial developmental stage. I think that the second reason I am qualified to talk about this is because I live in a millennial world. I work for a millennial company where everyone is under 35. I have a millennial job, which is creating viral content for social media platforms. That's the kind of job that didn't exist 10 years ago, and the kind of job that no matter how many times I explain it to my parents, they have no idea what I do. When I'm not at work writing and creating these online things for this online world, I clock out and I go do stand-up comedy. And I do comedy in bars and comedy clubs all across Southern California. And I do it with other millennial comedians who are comedians because they are not employed. And I'm amazed, too, that everywhere I go, no matter what time of night it is, if it's a Tuesday and I'm going to a bar in industrial Oceanside, it's 11:30 p.m., there's still a group of people my age who are there because they have nothing better to do. So I think we have a lot of problems, if that's the case. I know my generation in person and on paper. I see them every day. I get demographic data from clients. I have Facebook. I am immersed in it 24/7. I text, I tweet, I'm always online, I'm always moving at light speed. I'm always looking for the next trend so that I can declare that I'm over it. And yes, being a millennial is exhausting. But it's also amazing. We're the first generation living in a new world with access to every corner of it. We're facing unique challenges that are forcing us to innovate and improvise and figure out ways to exist outside a system that has no place for us. We're more than the lazy, narcissistic, and entitled kids we're told we are. We're a lot of good things. We're more tolerant than any other generation. We have values that we feel strongly about and are willing to fight for, even when that means risking everything to expose government surveillance on the American people. After all, Edward Snowden could be described as yet another selfish, tech-savvy millennial who didn't like the way his bosses ran things and had unrealistic expectations about the way things should be. So these are some of the things I hope to shed light on today, to paint a picture of our generation and provide some insight and, of course, some of my personal hopes for the future. In order to do this, I'll be covering four major topics, all of which I think are connected and paint a picture of our past, present, and future. I'll start with the environmental conditions that I think formed our personalities and shaped the world we live in today. Then I'll cover our values, which I believe have been formed by these environmental factors. Next, I'll talk about our lifestyle, and I will close with my thoughts on our future. I have plenty of statistics to back up my story today, but there are also many assertions made based on these facts that I simply don't agree with based on my own experience. But don't worry, I'll let you know what those are. So let's start with the environmental conditions that shaped us. Every generation is given its own slice of history, which it is born into, which it's molded by, which colors its worldview. And millennials, of course, are no different. We're products of our environment, and we can attribute our evolution to both nature and nurture. And all of this is to say that there's a reason we are the way we are. And also, it's not our fault. So, like any generation, we also have our own paradoxes. What I'm highlighting today are conditions that the research says has shaped us, and some things that I believe have shaped us myself. Sometimes these issues contradict each other, but I think they're important to get a larger and more realistic portrait of who we are. So, to talk about the things that shape us, it helps to start at the beginning in the home. Many millennials are children of divorce. We're not the first generation to claim this title, Gen Xers were, but we'll take second place if we need it. A quarter of millennials have divorced parents, and in fact, I would argue that the only reason those numbers aren't higher is because we have a higher percentage of parents who decided to never get married. But what we do know is that a third of all millennials grew up in a one-parent household. Naturally, this has shaped our idea of marriage, family, and relationships. We may not put much faith in familial relationships or even romantic relationships. Instead, we rely more on our friends as family, which may explain why social networks have become so important to us now. It has shaped a personality that is self-reliant and slightly distrustful of institutions and relationships. In general, I think the word commitment is a loaded word for millennials. We're commitment phobic in many ways, from our romantic relationships to our jobs. Many people would say this is a flippant attitude, and that's evidence of our sense of entitlement, that we always want something easier or better or funner. But I would argue that we avoid investing ourselves fully in a lot of areas of life because we see how painfully it can end, whether in divorce papers or a company pink slip. And now I will contradict myself. While there's a portion of this generation who may have been bred from broken homes and frustration, who grew up to be independent and skeptical of adult actions, the media likes to focus more on another group of millennials. These are the children raised by helicopter parents. These are the kids who grew up in intact homes with overly protective parents who coddled us, who called our teachers to get us a higher grade, who praised every little thing we did, and who instilled that sense of entitlement that we're so now hated for. These are the kids who received trophies and participation awards their whole lives and have now grown up to believe that they deserve more than what they are getting and that they shouldn't have to work so hard or pay their dues. This phenomenon has bred such rampant narcissism that now we can eagerly display on social media. But I think this is certainly a picture of our generation, but it's also way blown out of proportion. Researchers have also found that these traits mostly apply to white, affluent teenagers who grew up in the suburbs. Having grown up in Orange County, of course, I know that these people very much exist, but I know a lot of others who don't exactly match that profile. So not only were we born into these familial situations, we were born into a world and a time in history when technology made its way into every facet of our lives. Millennials are called digital natives because we are the first generation to grow up with this technology. And I kind of think of technology as a sibling. It was there for every formative stage of my development. Anytime I grew up, so did technology. It came in new colors and there was something cool and new to look at from junior high to high school. We saw computers become laptops, we have cell phones and now GPS. Everywhere we went, everything we grew up in our homes and our schools, was all technology-based. And interestingly and geniusly, Apple, when we were young, made deals with to get their computers into all of our schools, and they have bred an incredibly loyal generation. So kudos to them. But that technology has shaped and dictated every part of our lives. If you don't adopt it, you don't exist in our society. So it's not a choice anymore. It's a requirement to participate and to be present. The hyperconnection of technology, the proliferation of online commerce, these things have given us everything we want as soon as we want it. As a result, millennials don't have patience because we never needed to develop it. I'm very critical of this aspect of our culture. I personally think that technology should complement our lives, should eliminate those pesky chores so that we can have more fun doing what we're doing. But for my generation, it has supplemented our lives. This is something that, as a strict librarian, I do not approve of. But the other thing I'm worried about, too, is that this obsessive technology consumption is very dangerous, and it is shaping our brains in a very real way. We get a hit of dopamine every time we get a new email or text, which means we physically experience withdrawal when we're not connected. The prevalence of social media and the ability to curate your own existence online means that we feel like everyone else's lives are better than ours. We feel depressed, insecure, and resentful of others when we scroll through our feeds. And we suffer from a unique epidemic known as FOMO, which stands for the fear of missing out. We always want to know what's happening, so we obsessively check our cell phones. That's why we're always in them. That's why we're not paying attention to anything else around us. Of course, the other unfortunate side effect that you guys might relate to more is that technology has created a power shift between generations. Technology is a new form of power, and it's in the hands of the youth. We've always needed the counsel, advice, and wisdom of our elders, but they don't understand this world, so we have no guides, and worse, they are at our mercy. I know, that's a scary thought. Which brings me to my next point. Millennials are used to being scared. I would call this growing up in a culture of fear. We came of age in a time of instability, of war. Fear that I think felt closer to us than previous generations. World War II united my grandparents because they had an identified enemy that was overseas. My parents may have intellectually fought the government about a war, again, that was happening overseas, but for my generation, we have felt war on our own soil. The scarier part is that it wasn't always a foreign enemy, but often other Americans who were even our age. My high school experience particularly was marked by two tragic bookends. Columbine happened when I was a freshman, and 9/11 happened when I was a senior. So despite so many people complaining that we are sheltered and coddled, millennials have grown up in a real world with very real problems. We fought the war on terror, we've seen a fixed presidential election, watched natural disasters and government failure, and now we all live with the effects of global warming. We think constantly, what's the point? And we can't escape it. Even our virtual world has real problems. With the internet came sexual predators and cyberbullying, and now, as we all know, government surveillance. So why would we fight to maintain a system that is so, so broken? But of course, we're not the first generation to think this. But we are the first generation that might think about this a little bit longer because of the one thing, of course, that our capitalist society relies on, which is money. Which brings me to the economic recession, or rather the complete disaster that put a bullet in the American dream for this generation. Those are strong words, I know. But it's something that I feel very strongly about, and I think it has shaped our outlook eternally. This generation was told by society to follow the rules, to do the right thing, go to college, get the job, and live the dream. And then everything fell apart. Our parents lost their jobs, our degrees lost their value. In fact, it's now taken me 6 years to reach an earning potential that matched my college waitress wages. And of course, we have no jobs. Estimates say there's 37% under or unemployment, and that's the highest share among this age group. We've absolutely been hit harder than any other generation during this recession. And worse, we ended up having to move home. That's if our parents hadn't lost their house in the recession. And now we're crushed under mountains of student debt with bad prospects and no hope of ever being able to pay it off. I'm actually one of the lucky few. I graduated with no college debt. Thank you, parents. I'd like to publicly thank you for that. But unfortunately, my sister's attending the same school, and in only 7 years, my parents are paying twice as much for her education as they pay for mine. All of my friends are saddled with student debt, ranging from $30,000 to $200,000. There's no hope, basically. We're the most educated generation, of course, but we have nothing to show for it. We're hopeless, we're furious, and we're resentful. We sound like angry teenagers, and in a lot of ways we are. We can't grow up because of the economy. Most of our adult milestones are delayed by almost a decade. And trust me, we hate this as much as you do. I remember a friend who recently graduated who was lamenting the disparity between our generations and our grandparents' generation. He said, "You know, sometimes I feel like I'd gladly fight a war for 4 years if it meant I could come home and buy a house, two cars, and one family on an income that was just my own." I know that's a harsh and foolish statement, and I didn't want to bring up the fact that our generation doesn't fight 4-year wars, we fight 10-year wars. So needless to say, all of these environmental factors have shaped our values, and I would say the only benefit of growing up in a broken system is that we shed the beliefs that we think have contributed to its demise. We're not unique in thinking that we're unique, of course. Every generation has rebelled against its predecessors. But I think many of the values we hold are important and are deeply entrenched in our psyches and spirits. And best of all, I think they're evidence of true evolution. You'll also notice that many of these values happen to be Unitarian values. Starting with tolerance. I'm so proud of my generation when it comes to this. We are the most tolerant, hands down. We embrace diversity. We accept everyone. We're the most racially diverse. Interestingly, we do share something in common with our grandparents in that 10% of us were born to immigrant parents. But we have had a different reaction to that. Unlike our grandparents, who shunned their ethnic roots and tried to Americanize, we are making the concept of being American a little more ethnic. And because we all grew up together, we're a lot less fearful of each other. And now I'm going to cite some statistics to prove that. 65% approve same-sex marriage, 65% approve the legalization of marijuana, 52% believe immigration is a good thing, and we identify much more as Democrats than any other generation. I do love these numbers. I love that they're in line with what I see and what I want to see. We are champions of equality in every sphere, from women's rights to gay marriage to class equality. Of course, although Occupy Wall Street didn't go particularly far, it still happened. Another defining thing is our interest in self-expression. Certainly this is a byproduct of that self-esteem boosting I talked about, but we are confident and we're eager to show the world who we are. Of course, there's a fine line between self-expression and narcissism, and we're certainly treading into the latter, but I still believe that at the core, we are a generation that is desperate to express ourselves and to showcase our creativity. For many of us, art is a major fixture of our life. And I think that's a wonderful reflection of a generational character. The ability to access and create art in all forms, thanks to the democratization of those creation tools, has facilitated this, meaning that online we are all photographers, writers, bloggers, designers, musicians, and directors. Online is where we perform mostly. And I chose that word specifically because I do think our online presence is often performance, for good or for bad. We have these fierce individual identities and a million subcultures to express them through. And one of the most interesting things I think you'll find about millennials is how many tattoos we have. 38% of all millennials have tattoos. And I'm sure you've seen that we don't just get one, we get full sleeves. It'd be fascinating to see what we look like when we're grandparents. The next value I want to talk about is our do-it-yourself attitude, or DIY. The recent Time cover story on millennials asserted that millennials are not trying to take over the establishment. We're growing up without one, which means we're making our own versions of life. The DIY attitude is pervasive and evidence that we are not so reliant on society to hold our hands despite our helicopter parents. From creating entirely new businesses to disseminating our own content, we're playing in a world entirely of our making in the online sphere. Of course, I don't think we would be so enterprising if we could have taken the easier 9-to-5 route, but as that has not really been an option for us, we have to make do with what we have. And of course, what we have is technology. This gives us enormous power. Traditional models of everything, from business to media to government, are outdated and struggling. So we do it ourselves and we move outside the system. If you have an invention idea, you can set up a Kickstarter online and get it funded through crowdsourcing. If you can't afford a coffee table, you find a tutorial online and you make one. This DIY attitude extends to the larger community, too. We do take strong moral stances on things we care about, and when we don't like the way things are going, we take matters into our own hands. The group Anonymous, some of you may know of, is a collective of hackers deemed cyber terrorists or virtual Robin Hoods, depending on whom you ask. But they organize online attacks of organizations they deem to be encroaching on civil liberties or simply behaving badly. They've hacked the FBI, the CIA, major corporations, and even the website of the hateful Westboro Baptist Church. They're virtual vigilantes, of course, which is dangerous, but I would also consider them an important part of the New World ecosystem. I don't know who Anonymous is, but I know that they are millennials. Now, when it comes to work, it's a very interesting concept. We're always told that we're lazy, that we don't want to pay our dues, we don't want to do anything. But that's not true. We want to work. We just want to work the way that we would like to work. After seeing our parents slave away at jobs, working long hours for companies that didn't value them, as evidenced by massive layoffs during the recession, we don't look to our jobs to define us. We really can't, because a lot of us don't have jobs. But truly, we just want a more balanced existence, to be able to enjoy the fruits of our labor, no matter how small they may be. For this reason, among others, we're not very loyal to employers. We refuse to waste our lives for a company that doesn't appreciate us. And this is certainly narcissism at work, but it's also self-preservation. We won't work for a system that doesn't work for us. But that isn't to say we don't care about work. We do, very much. But we are hyper-aware of time and the value of it, so we want the work we do to be meaningful. Simply put, we want to do something we believe in, something we value, and something that we're valued for. And lastly, there's an interesting value, which is not particularly a value, but something that we don't hold as a value, and that's religion. 26% of millennials identify themselves as non-religious, the highest percentage ever. Certainly, more consider themselves culturally religious, but in practice, we're not really going to church. I think this is an important shift. We are ditching our archaic systems that don't align with our modern values. Hopefully, this will also force religions to evolve, to step into the new world if they have any hope of surviving. Now, because of these values, we're shaping our lives in different ways, restructuring and placing priorities in areas that other generations haven't. Needless to say, we are constantly connected, and technology infuses every part of our lives, including our jobs. Many of us are unemployed or underemployed, so our careers are a little off track, but many of us don't know what we want to do. We try different jobs, and we crave jobs that enable us to work remotely, to work more efficiently. We're likely to gravitate to companies in the future and even now, if they are so willing to have us. but we're likely to gravitate to companies that understand our culture and that cater to us. In the next 10 to 20 years, they will have to, because all the boomers will be gone and we will be the new generation in the workforce. In terms of family, we are traditional in that we still hope for marriage and kids one day, but it's not a priority right now. Only 23% of millennials are married. That's half the amount of people who were married at this age during our grandparents' time. If we do get married, we get married later. Average age is 26 for women, 27 for men, and that's, of course, the oldest ever. That marriage average age tends to get older with each generation, but for us, we just can't. We can't get married. We can't afford it. Only 34% have kids. Interestingly, we care much more about being good parents than having a good marriage. We also are more accepting of different family structures, gay, straight, and single mothers. But regardless of family structure, the economy has delayed those milestones for many of us. As I mentioned previously, we value our friendships and social relationships immensely, and we use technology to stay connected, to document every moment, memory, and every shared connection. We're obsessed with what our friends are doing, and we have to share these things the minute they happen. These social networks are also increasingly vital to our existence in terms of professional networking. In terms of home, home is not necessarily the epicenter of our lives. Because many of us have had to move back home, or we live with multiple roommates, we're not really happy about staying home. We'd rather go out and see other people and do other things that kind of get our minds away from the fact that we are failing so much. We actually watch less TV than other generations, but we're still glued to our computers, of course. But we still do get out and we exercise more. Now, how we spend our money is an interesting insight into who we are. As a generation, of course, we don't have a lot of money. We carry enormous amounts of student debt, and it's killing us. The good news is, though, because of this, we don't carry as much consumer debt. This is also because we're not really eligible for credit cards. But we are more thoughtful about the things we buy for that reason. Unlike previous generations, we aren't really interested in cars, and Detroit is freaking out, let me tell you. We have car makers who come to me and they say, oh my gosh, how on earth are we going to survive because nobody cares about our product? But we want cheap, more eco-friendly forms of transportation. We also aren't buying houses. This is partly because of our economic situation, but also because we value other things more. We're certainly becoming more economical. I mentioned the do-it-yourself movement. This is very popular with millennials. We're learning how to make things our grandparents did. We craft, we build what we can, we do with what we can with what we have. Use it up, make it do. Was that the old World War II saying, I think? Use it up, wear it out, make it do, or live without. That was it. There we go. But we are becoming more economical. Do it yourself, learning to live with what we have. Of course, we love our technology and electronics, and we do spend money on those things, but we also value experiences more than those things. We go to restaurants, concerts, festivals, and we travel. Our love of travel is very telling, actually. Where previous generations often lusted after cars and homes and material goods, we have more education, we're more globalized, and so we crave more exposure to the world, particularly through travel. Lastly, I want to mention one unique and particular trait I associate with my generation, and that's a peculiar obsession with food. We are really into food. We cook it, we buy it, we take pictures of it constantly. I know this is a sort of random thought, but it is a very, very unusual thing. I think it's thanks to our ethnic diversity and our exposure to other cultures through travel. But, you know, the more niche, the more obscure, the more high class, the more we flaunt our obsession with food as a badge of honor. I don't exactly know why it is, but you'll start to notice it more and more. So, what will our future look like? It's hard to predict the future, of course. And as our environment has shaped us today, it will continue to shape our future. But I'd like to offer my own thoughts about our future. Despite the world we live in and the challenges we face, millennials are optimistic that we may be able to leave some mark at least. We may, in fact, mom and dad, be able to fulfill the hippie dream you once had. But you got so sidetracked by cash and stability that you ended up in your comfy Orange County home. We may be your saving grace. So I'll leave you with four things today that I think our generation will do better than those before us, which will leave the world better for those who come after us. The first is that we will embrace true equality. Our tolerance will allow for a more inclusive society that acknowledges equality and promotes acceptance across all spheres. This will include gender equality, marriage equality, racial equality, and economic equality. As a woman, this is particularly important for me. In my lifetime, I anticipate that by the time I have children, my husband will share an equal part of the domestic responsibility, that my bosses will allow me to work from home on days I need to, and that my children will grow up in a more tolerant, more diverse world. Secondly, I think millennial-led companies will act more like people. We will embrace corporate sustainability, become corporate citizens, and take responsibility and social stances very seriously. Hopefully, we'll avoid the pitfalls of all the evil corporations that came before us. But I do see some evidence of this already. Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook marched in the Gay Pride Parade in San Francisco this year. My own millennial company, we put aside a portion of the budget to do pro bono work for nonprofits. Thirdly, I think we'll be more conscious and therefore more peaceful. Thanks to our education and travel experiences, I think we will be exposed to other cultures and ways of life that will change our thinking. We will be more conscious of the things we do environmentally, and we will be more aware of how our actions affect our communities and global world. When we come to power, we may be more compassionate and more aware, better able to negotiate with other countries, better able to serve ourselves. And lastly, I think that technology will continue to empower us. Technology will allow us to do more and be more on our own. This empowerment will motivate us to solve real-world problems and to make real change. We will use technology to preserve and advance humanity, fight disease, create sustainable energy sources, doing our best to care for our entire world the way we should have all along. So these are the hopes I have for my generation. And I look forward to seeing how many things prove true or how many ways I was terribly, terribly wrong. I know I rushed through that a little bit, but thank you for your time.
Trayvon Martin was a young millennial. Yeah. Killed in cold blood by the older millennial. What about race in your paradigm of the generations?
That is a great question. I would also say rest in peace, Trayvon Martin. My Facebook feed this morning was abuzz with fury over that verdict. I think that's a great question. I would say everything, of course, is a product of nature and nurture, your environment, things like that. In my personal experience, there's no problem. We joke about these things. Of course, as a comedian with other comedians who are of all races, it's so absurd to have these sort of feelings. I think that may be not particularly an isolated case, but unusual. I would not blame the state of Florida for its citizens, but I certainly think the environment you grow up in, the parents you have. That's also not to say, too, that millennials aren't, you know, hyper-religious, hyper-conservative, middle America. I'm talking, of course, as someone who does comedy in liberal Hollywood and grew up on the West Coast.
Just as a follow-up, I used to think naively that racism in this country would eventually disappear as the older generations disappear.
Absolutely.
But the problem is, it's not disappearing.
This is absolutely true, and I agree. And I struggle and fight with my own incredibly conservative, sheltered, helicopter-parented white friends about this, because there are certainly still cultural opinions and ideas that I agree. I hope it would get better, but it will always be there, I'm sure, in some ways.
Thank you again, Katie. Very informative. I'm just wondering where, in your growing up, you learned that money is not only the root of all evil, it also is the driving force behind successful companies and corporations. That if they don't succeed in making a profit, that ugly word, they don't any longer exist. And when it comes to letting their workers go, that's all in the name of making that profit. The human side of that equation has to be second to the money side of that equation, or there is no further existence. I wonder where in your life you were taught that.
It's a very, very good question. I I would say the thing that first came to mind was I was a journalism major in college, and I worked for the student paper. And the first time I learned about truth and justice and fact versus advertising dollars was at that time. And I think that for many of us, you know, certainly we're all born with these high ideals which get ground down by the realities of life by the time we get to the ages that we're at. But for me personally, I would say that that is when I realized, and it is hard too, because it's evil to blame evil corporations, but there's a reason that they exist, and it's a system that we live in, and we can't really change that system. But for me, it would be when I realized that advertisers sometimes dictate content in the newspaper.
I've been teaching community college for a while, and the majority of the people have been essentially millennials. And I realized as I was listening to your talk, I haven't really thought all these years about, you know, what is it that makes these people tick. So I guess I would say, to a teacher like me, what advice would you give for how to best go about educating your generation?
That's a good point. I would say first acknowledge that things are different, and that we're not crazy, and that we're not... Everything I told you today has shaped us, and the world is very different, truthfully, than my mom's generation and anybody else's. So I would say just acknowledging that things are different helps break down that barrier. We feel, as I was mentioning about intergenerational conflict, we feel so not understood. You know, when I can't explain to mom what I do, she can't give me advice on how to do it better. So I would say... understanding, talking to them at their level, and acknowledging that they have a different sort of world that they're living in. Okay, thank you. And I'm glad to talk to anybody afterwards.